Hello, hello, hello. It is Stu. It is the What the Fuck Gym Talk podcast. And this is something I have not done in a while. I have not opened my book of business, meaning the gym owners and business owners I work with on a monthly recurring level, in a hot minute because of COVID, because of my license model and urban movement stuff, just really, really busy with that. But I have opened the book back up. For those of you guys who don't know, I only work with 40 micro gym owners and fitness business owners per month. That's it. It's the max that I do. I work with people. I literally month-to-month level, no contract. You get access to me for either 30 minutes once a month or 1 hour once a month. You get full access to Micro Gym University. You get a bat phone to me where you can text, call, video message, whatever it is, audio message, and we can be in contact in between our calls. And that's how I go ahead and create custom tailored solutions to your business problems. So if you're looking to work with somebody where you're not stuck in some douchey fucking 12-month EFT contract, you have to give your banking information, you got to spend $6,000 upfront, you literally want to get on a call, talk with me in real life, just me, where I just listen to you, talk to you, we talk about your problems, I come up with a solution, an executable plan, and then we tackle it together. And then in between that, you want Micro Gym University and be able to access me when you have, a fire go off in your business on a random Tuesday or some shit pops off late at night and you want my opinion on it, then shoot me a DM, let me know, because this is the first time I'm opening up to go back to 40 per month and it's going to fill up quick. Guys, we're going to get into the podcast here in a second, but just thank you for listening to the pre-roll. And I really do hope, like, my goal is to work with as many of you guys in some capacity. If it's for 1 month, 2 months, fucking 3 years, I don't give a shit. But if you got some problems and you want someone to bounce ideas off of and help you create an executable plan of action, I hope that I'm your fucking guy. All right, on to the podcast. What is up, guys? It is Stu, and it is another episode of the What the Fuck Gym Talk podcast, and I have Marcus Philly on the interview today. Marcus, thank you so much for joining me this morning, brother.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Awesome. I want to, we just talked a little bit before hitting record. I want to talk a little bit about what you developed with functional bodybuilding in what I call creating a unique belief in fitness. I've watched you from afar for years. Yeah, correct me the stat if I'm wrong, 6 times at the CrossFit Games, correct?
Yeah, that started back in 2010. Okay. And that was a 7-year process of being involved in the sport.
So you're in this professional sport athlete where you're using CrossFit as a training methodology for professional sport. I mean, it was GRID, it was CrossFit. I mean, it was very much, that was the training program for sport. And I always watched CrossFit athletes as they, the sun kind of set on their time in the sport or when they decided to move on. And I was always very curious, what would they do? What do they do afterwards? Do they continue to do CrossFit just a little bit less intense? And you were the first one I truly felt actually went ahead and created a unique belief in fitness. And I mean, and you went obviously all into it. And I think sitting back, a lot of us like, man, is this guy just a marketing genius and took the two most searchable words, like functional and bodybuilding, and just is like, oh my God, I've got this great opportunity to create an online training program. Talk to me a little bit about the inception of when you started rewiring your own training into what, functional bodybuilding is today.
Yeah. I wish I could say I was a marketing genius and I just like thought this thing up, and I wish I had other ideas like that at some points, but no, that's certainly not the case of how things evolved for me. And this idea of creating my own unique belief in fitness, it actually, I think that's like, I don't know, I haven't heard it really described that way, but that's sort of how my journey has started. It started from, almost 2 decades ago. It was like, I got into fitness and I just kind of, whatever I could consume from an information education standpoint, I did. I followed different training programs, read different magazines, read online publications, tried different stuff. I always use myself as like a training, sort of proving grounds for like whether this thing works or this thing doesn't work. I was the, self-experimenter. But I took things pretty seriously. I followed programs to the, to the letter, to the rest period, to the tempo, followed nutrition protocols, and tried to just sort of learn by doing. And I always wanted to extend that research process to coaching too, not just on myself. You know, hey, try this program. Let me coach you in this. Let me try working with you on this training protocol or this lifting thing that we're doing. And that's kind of been like 20 years of what I've been into since I was 16 years old and I got my first like gym workout in. CrossFit was definitely was more than just like using CrossFit as a competitive, you know, sport approach to fitness. I was a gym owner, I was a coach first, and then I got into the sport kind of by accident. So I was always looking at CrossFit through the lens of like, is this the best thing, you know, for me as an athlete to be the best in the sport? Is this the best thing for my clients? Is this the best thing for, you know, whatever different, you know, end consumer might want to use it. And while I drank the Kool-Aid pretty hard and I got really into the sport of fitness, I always was questioning whether we were doing the best that we could by our clients in the gym by delivering something to them that looked similar to what I was doing for the sport, you know. And over the years, it got more and more similar. I was like, why are we getting so close in prescription to general population and somebody who's trying to compete on a world stage and, you know, an athletic endeavor? So the questions were always there. I was fortunate to have been exposed to a lot of good strength and conditioning coaches and health and fitness leaders before I ever saw CrossFit. And I say that because many people in the CrossFit world ecosystem, their first introduction to strength and conditioning was Greg Glassman, was CrossFit as a methodology. They didn't get Charles Poliquin, Paul Check. They didn't read strength conditioning journals. They never knew that T-Nation was a website where you can go and get free articles from the best coaches in the world at the time. You know, the 2000s were like it was a hub of great information coming from people like Eric Cressy and, you know, Dan John and you name it. Like there was just great articles written, good thought provoking stuff there. Plus a lot of supplement conversations, but I got all that prior to CrossFit. So when CrossFit came along, I was like, whoa, here's just another tool, another approach that captivated me more than the other ones because of the competitive aspect of it, because of the performance aspect of it. In college and high school, and I wanted to challenge my body. That's what made sport fun for me, was to see what my body was capable of. And while all these other coaches had great training protocols to get strong, many of them were coaching people to get strong so that they can go and apply it to a sport. I didn't have a sport that I loved. And here was CrossFit that was like the training itself became a sport, became competitive, became something that I could push myself in for, you know, for as long as I wanted to do it. That's what I thought. And so that's what got me so interested in it. Anyhow, so I'm kind of skirting around the question, but it's just to say, like, it goes back so far that it wasn't just like, okay, I'm done with competing. You know, how am I going to create my own training methodology? It was, even when I was competing, I was like, this is not right. There's nothing smart about doing this for the long haul because I'm getting broken every single year right around competition time. And I hate having to rebuild myself. I hate this process of going up and down and up and down. I want to find something that's a bit more sustainable for me, even within the sport, and especially after I walk away from the sport.
Was there a moment when you, as a coach, gym owner type scenario, do you remember a specific, you know, prescribing a workout and sitting back and going like, what in the hell? For me, I remember we were coaching. I think we had Carl Paoli, great guy, come out and he was instructing. I let him use the facility and he was instructing a kipping handstand pushup tutorial. And I remember the day There was an attendee who by no stretch of the imagination should be getting inverted by absolutely no. And there we were kind of cramming round pegs in the square holes and coaches were taking their time. Like everyone was taking like, almost like this individual is horrible. It was like an experiment and every coach was trying a different cue to get this person. Like, no. And then I thought about it. I'm like, even the fittest individual,
would we not be best served by doing a seated dumbbell Z press at a tempo? Would that just not be a more simplistic from a facility management? You know, I work on operational capacity with gym owners, and everyone's got to have so much wall space. I'm like, why do we need so much wall space? Well, we have handstand pushups. Like, what if we didn't? What if you sat your ass on the ground and pressed some dumbbells? You could save a lot of square footage and lower your overhead considerably if that was maybe your go-to. Mm-hmm. Did you have a moment like that, or a certain movement protocol, or like certain elements you're like, overhead squats for these, I just don't see it anymore for my GPP people?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of interesting. There's a number along the way, but there were, in some of the earlier days of coaching group classes in CrossFit, and I used to kind of get really excited and amped up at the idea of like having 20 people all facing forward in the class with a PVC pipe in hand in these perfect rows, and we're drilling Olympic lifts, right? And I remember like, you know, going through a snatch progression with my with a class of 20 people in a bright fluorescent room at 5 a.m. with like, and it took every ounce of energy and focus and hype and yelling and screaming for me to like deliver this thing. And it's like after 15, 20 minutes, we're like maybe getting into doing some barbell work with them. And then 10 minutes later, we have to like transition to a Metcon that's just kind of long and gross and whatever. And I used to just like, I was in love with that process because I felt like I was doing something. I was like, oh, I'm coaching. I'm like yelling orders and I got everyone like doing the same thing at the same time. And then it would be like something like that where I felt like, oh, I'm making such a difference. This is so effective. And then just looking back and kind of reviewing, what the hell am I doing? Like, you know, I don't know, like a year goes by, 2 years goes by. I'm like, no one's getting better at these lifts, really. I mean, there's some people that are, but most of them are just sort of complaining about the same thing. It's like, why do we have to like spend 20 minutes of my, you know, precious hour doing like drills and like flaring our elbows out to the side, like scarecrows? Like, what is the point of that? Like that was, I'm not going to be an Olympic weightlifter. And then there were other things that I get like, you know, as the coach, I got so focused on like, I'm doing a great job because I'm teaching progressions. I know these lifts. So in and out, like I can give people cues, but I wasn't thinking about the client. There's another example of like, and it's funny. It kind of ties into Carl Pally too. He had taught like a, I remember watching him teach a progression on like how to teach rebounding in box jumps to people, you know, using like very low plates. And, you know, this concept of like, well, when we jump down, we bring our feet together, because when their feet are closed, our legs are close together, we like create some, you know, better energy transfer through our legs. And then we rebound up and we land with wide stance. And it was this whole, and I was like, oh, this is great. I can teach people to rebound their box jumps. And so I have this like group of beginners that I'm teaching how to rebound box jumps off of like 2 inches, 4 inches, 6 inches, 8 inches, you know, we work them up to 12 inch rebounding box jumps. And like, I spent this long progression and I had this like relatively new person who like was doing like these rebounding box jumps at 10 inches and like totally blew out her ankle. And I was like, what am I doing? Like, why am I trying to teach somebody to rebound a box jump? You know? So it would be this, like, there were these moments where as coaches in CrossFit, we were getting so caught up in the process of teaching complex movement or teaching advanced skills or teaching progressions in barbell patterns. And we felt empowered because we had this like long list of like cues and progression steps to get people better. But at no point were we ever asking like, is this the right thing for the person? Are they enjoying this? Is this what they want? Is, you know, we just assumed that's what they wanted, or we were trying to force them to like it. And whether somebody got injured or somebody burnt out or somebody left the gym or somebody, you know, just said like, this sucks, you know, like initially you had to be like, oh, that's a shot to my ego. That's a shot to what I thought was true. And now I've heard it enough times. I'm like, whoa, we got to change this. This isn't working.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you had the fortune to grow up and be a true student of strength and conditioning. The time you spent with James Fitzgerald and OPEX, I'm sure a lot of it has had influence on you. I was fortunate enough, I went through James's CCP courses, and that was a huge paradigm shift for me. And with that, when I started really changing, I started looking for an example. I started looking at the idea, concept of dropping a barbell, just that simple thing. And I'm looking at it from a business perspective. I'm like, okay, I've got this. I have this act that creates this very high decibel reaction, scaring new prospects when they come in, right? And I started looking at it. And I'm like, a lot of these barbells getting dropped are happening with a sub maximal weight. It's more of an ego, you know, rite of passage. I'm a CrossFitter, I drop a barbell type scenario, than it is hitting a 1RM split jerk and dropping it safely or spilling the weight as, you know, an Olympic weightlifting coach would classify. And I started just pulling apart these little elements of what my current unique belief in fitness was, CrossFit, and started changing them. And I remember I walked in the one gym one day and I said, okay, there will no longer, we're not doing any maximalist, but we will never drop a barbell. If the barbell gets picked up off the ground, it has to be put back on the ground. And as you bring it down, everything is going to be at this 4-second descent. And this amazing thing happened. People complained, some people left, but everyone that stuck it out within a good 12-week period, just the structural scapular strength of having to lower a barbell back to the shoulder girdle, people started getting pull-ups that had, and we had not done anything different with any kind of programming with pull-ups. They weren't having as much pain. And that was like my first like blinker, like our light bulb moment where I was like, holy shit, we've been only doing 50% of a movement. Press a barbell overhead, drop it, walk away from it, go on to the next movement. I'm like, no, there's still 50%. There's an eccentric portion of this that we have completely left because it allowed us to go faster for a better score. When you started R&Ding with functional bodybuilding, what were the first things you like instantly, like, I'm getting rid of this and I'm playing in this space, or I'm pulling this thing out. Like, how did you start pulling at those threads?
Well, you know, the sort of earliest days of functional bodybuilding, you know, were guided by a coach. Like, I had a coach at the time, Mike Lee, who was working with me. I was just, had just wrapped up some competitive season, and I had a pretty bad shoulder injury. I never got any of these injuries, like, you know, diagnosed or classified or anything like that. Just my shoulder was jacked up, which made a lot of sense because I just spent, you know, 6 months moving really fast and really hard and high intensity and competed. So it's just, you know, I didn't have perfect position. I had good position, but so the process was, hey, Mike, I got to heal my shoulder. Let's figure this out. And I think Mike had been going through quite a bit of like his own growth as a strength and conditioning coach outside of CrossFit, getting a lot of exposure to Pollock in. And he was just always a great student of just like going and seeking out different, you know, coaching protocols. And he was well-versed in a lot of different stuff that wasn't just like thrusters and muscle ups. So we started doing some like prehab, rehab, a lot of, you know, strength protocols that were dumbbell oriented, kettlebell oriented, unilateral, using landmines. I think he had like pulled some, you know, landmine progression, pressing progressions from Cressy that were really useful in getting my scaps to move better. And so this was like stuff I had explored in the long, you know, distant past, but I hadn't really been exposed to, you know, over the course of like the main bulk of my competitive CrossFit. So when I started having those things show up in my training and things really slowed down a lot, I mean, you know, OPEX, James, Mike, they always implemented some form of tempo resistance training throughout the year as a control point, even when we got into like, you know, competitive seasons, but definitely in the off season, that was always something that was like popular. And we, you know, there's a lot of Pollock and principles built into a lot of their training programs, as James had spent some time interning with him early on and, you know, carried a lot of that stuff into the training protocols that he was delivering through OPEX. So I was doing like a lot of slow contraction speeds, lots of isometric work, lots of strict strength, lots of unilateral dumbbell loading, landmine loading, a decent amount of band, you know, banded resistance work. And all of those, like, it was like a 3 to 4 month period of time where I just regained so much of what I had lost and felt you know, for the first time in almost like 3 or 4 years, I was like, wow, I'm really getting strong again. You know, I'm not just like taking the strength that I've had and just constantly pushing the limit of it, but like I'm developing a foundational layer of strength that is just missing from all my competitors. And this is why people are getting so jacked up. And to be perfectly honest, it's something that I intuitively knew early on in my CrossFit training days. So in 2010 or 9 was when I really like jumped into CrossFit fully as an athlete. Prior to that, I spent 2 years working with this group, this local group of coaches who were Czechies. They were big into Paul Czech stuff. And if anybody's done Paul Czech stuff, there's lots of physio ball work or Swiss ball work. There's tons of, you know, dumbbell rotational stuff. Like there's just, you know, a lot of isometric holds, a lot of core work, like things that don't make their way into the CrossFit space. And I was doing that almost exclusively. And I was strong and functional and I felt amazing. And my golf game was awesome. And I felt great. And then I wanted more and I got into CrossFit. So I'm doing CrossFit and I'm over here moving fast and pushing limits of intensity and just feeling beat up. And I'm like, gosh, I really feel like we should be mixing in some of that Czech stuff I was doing. Like that was good stuff, but like it doesn't have a place in this, like, you know, constantly varied high intensity functional movement. That's like measurable. I don't know how to fit that in. So I kind of just forgot about it. And then here I was 7 years later, and essentially like Mike is programming for me stuff that I had back then. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I knew I was missing something for a while. Like this is kind of profound, like to actually have this experience. So like I went down the rabbit hole of CrossFit and now I'm kind of coming full circle back to stuff that laid the foundation for me to be good at CrossFit, and I'm mixing them together. Okay. That's just, you know, it's clear as day to me that these things belong in the same space for sure.
Which elements, I know when I started, it was like 2014, where we started deconstructing my unique belief in fitness and wanting to reconstruct it. I didn't know how I wanted to express it. And I was always, I guess the thing I always said to myself was, well, you're not going to come up with something new, Stu. Like it's not like it's already been done. And it took a while for me to wrap my head around the idea that the ingredients are pretty much the same. The tools that we're using are all pretty much the same. You can be innovative with some of them. A couple of years ago, I took my gym. We got rid of 7 foot barbells and we reduced them all down to a 5 foot bar. And this 5 foot bar is amazing. It's the same 32 millimeter knurling. It only weighs 25 pounds, makes it more accessible for people. And you can load it up to about almost 300 pounds. So for the average GPP person, it's a perfect space saving. They cost $65 a piece. So from a business owner, I was loving that. And so I'm like, okay, I can change some of the tools up, but it's still a barbell. But it's these ingredients are always going to, for the most part, going to be very similar. And some of the tools we use until someone comes up with a better dumbbell or whatever it is going to be similar. But it's the recipes that are truly unique. Tempo was the thing I just latched onto. And maybe it's because it was the contrast to CrossFit. CrossFit was fast. And tempo is obviously whatever you want. And if you follow certain guys, you kind of follow for hypertrophy, tempo here, absolute strength, tempo here kind of scenario. What was maybe the one? Was it isometric? Was it more isolation? Was it, you know, anti-rotational work? Was there one element specifically that you kind of just bit your teeth into?
Yeah. I mean, I guess if I had to kind of name one, I think the tempo thing would be probably part of, high up on my list. But really to me, what was, so CrossFit was this pursuit of challenge. What makes things challenging? What pushes you? I believe CrossFit got pretty narrow in the ingredients to improve or increase the challenge of something. It was heavier, faster, and more complex. Those were really the only ways that they got faster. It was like, or sorry, got more intense. Was, you know, did your weight go up from week to week on your back squat? You know, was your time getting faster on your Fran? And were you going from, you know, the strict pull up to the kipping pull up to the bar muscle up to the ring muscle up? Like, were you getting more complex with your, you know, movement patterns? And there was never a reason to go backwards. You shouldn't go backwards if you go backwards and you're not getting better and you're not improving, you're not going to get the abs and you're not going to feel better. All the stuff. So it was very one dimensional. It was, in my mind, that just is like, that's a one dimensional approach. And I knew from past experience that there were a lot of ways in fitness to challenge yourself. There were like, you know, that was, they had three tools. I knew of at least like 20, there are probably 50 and more likely 100 ways to make it more challenging. And why challenge? Why am I using that word? Because when people are coming to the gym for fitness, you know, they want to have a feeling and a sense of accomplishment. I did something hard. I mean, whether they go in and really push themselves to their max or not is not going to dictate whether they have success in dropping body weight, you know, or losing body fat or getting stronger, right? There's anybody that's been in strength conditioning knows that you don't have to like bleed out of your eyeballs to get, you know, better aerobic capacity. You can do zone 2 cardiovascular training, which actually feels pretty tolerable and is enjoyable, and you can improve your aerobic fitness. You can do the same thing with resistance training. You can come in and you can lift at submaximal weights, percentages with certain time under tension. You can work hard, but not like blow yourself out and not be able to sit on the toilet for a week, and you'll get stronger. And you know, like that's true for every principle. So I know that there's ways for people to continue to get better and to improve upon their old self without having to push these crazy weights and intensities and complexities and speeds. It was just a matter of discovering and uncovering all those different tools that we can use to challenge people. So tempo was a great example of how you can challenge somebody within certain, like within the, you know, the label of having control over what that person's doing. I slow down eccentric movements. I add in, you know, pauses within different positions in a range of motion. I slow down concentric movements. You know, increase rep ranges, like do a lot of different stuff, which gets somebody completely away from thinking about load and completely away from thinking about, you know, going fast, and changes the focus entirely. And then the same could be said for, you know, adding in rest periods to conditioning. Like that was incredibly, you know, eye-opening. And then mixed modal conditioning. Well, we had been taught in the CrossFit mindset that mixed modal conditioning, you know, and Metcons were all about movements that promoted power and speed. So if you did a movement that slowed you down, what was the typical CrossFit coach prescribing? They were scaling people down to something that would let them go faster. And I started to learn, I'm like, no, I want this movement to slow you down when you're doing conditioning, because I don't want you expressing, you know, maximal power. I want you actually moving at submaximal power and at an aerobic sustainable pace. So I'm okay with that weight on the bar or that kettlebell that you're swinging being something you can only do 3 reps at a time and you have to take breaks. I don't care if you have to take 10 breaks today, because you're constantly moving, you know, you're still breathing, you're getting some good resistance training in, and you're not putting yourself in jeopardy of poor movement quality by trying to do 25 reps unbroken of a kettlebell swing at a weight that's just on the verge of being too heavy for you.
That revelation that you just talked about was 100% a very similar one for me. And then again, I'm always translating things back from the business side. I'm sure you experienced this as a CrossFit, as a seller of CrossFit, someone trying to tell the general population, there was this intimidation factor. And it wasn't helped by the fact that Sally would come into the gym and instantly she's seeing, I mean, this wild, chaotic expression of fitness happening and people kind of all over the place. Some people are cycling that barbell at 100 miles an hour. Others are kind of still unsure because it's day 3 for them. And the second we installed our tempo training and Sally walks in now and, you know, my GM or front desk is giving somebody a tour in the middle of a class and everybody during the war is going nice and like literally at the same pace. And then even when it's go time and the tempo still exists in the entire workout and people are moving controlled, it's something a prospect looks at and goes, okay, I think I can do this. I think the speed is one of the most intimidating factors we ever really applied to the fitness program of CrossFit, when really that should have been more reserved for the sport side of CrossFit. And I guess I would ask you this just point blank. Do you think for general physical preparation and these business owners who have opened up locations, physical locations with very high overhead, with the aspirations of creating a sustainable, profitable business, is CrossFit the best model, or is it a broken model for what they're serving, which is the general physical population?
I guess I find it hard to answer that question because at this stage, like, you know, I don't even know what the CrossFit model is anymore. I mean, it's being delivered in so many different ways that are out there. You know, I mean, the CrossFit model of 2014. Yeah. I think that's broken today. You know, I don't think that works. I think that way that the vast majority of affiliates were running back in that time, you know, it worked then and it's not working anymore. Right. So there's been a lot of evolution of it. I mean, I think that the thing that I will always be grateful for, you know, to CrossFit for was that prior to CrossFit, people were not showing up in hordes to gyms to do functional training or lift barbells, lift weights, right? Like they made it cool and sexy for your average person to go and lift a weight. It's like people know what these lifts are. They know what back squats and deadlifts and cleans and snatches are because of that. And they weren't driven away from it completely. It got more people doing it than, you know, anything has ever and probably will ever do to change the landscape of fitness. How it was delivered or how it continues to be delivered is like, you know, you're right. There's a lot of things about that culture of like, let's go hard that just don't resonate with people anymore. They bought into it. They got really excited by it. And then they got spit out of this like meat grinder where it was like just people getting injured, people getting, you know, burnt out, people not seeing results. The ones that have stuck with it, like for almost a decade, you know, there's a handful of them that have done the methodology correctly in quotes, you know, like they've kind of stuck to the principles and they're seeing true value from the methodology. The rest of them, I would say, are just connected to the community, connected to the people, connected to the coaches, connected to the routine. This is my gym. This is the first and only place I've ever had fitness success. So I'm going to stick with it. And they're just like, they're scared to go and explore other stuff that's out there because this is all they know. And these are their friends, right? That's not CrossFit. That's like CrossFit as a methodology that's doing that. That's the unique experience that they've had amongst a group of coaches, a group of members, like their community, et cetera. So there's a lot of ways to take that community and deliver fitness to them. You know, if done the right way, like, you know, you just inject a whole new program with that same community, those same coaches, you know, that same vibe, the same physical location that's only 2 miles from your house, like, and people would still be having a great experience, if not a better experience, than if they were just coming and doing, you know, a typical 10 to 15 minute strength piece in a Metcon every day, right? And so I don't necessarily believe that that's like, you know, if that's the model, if you're looking to open up a physical location, you know, and run a successful strength and conditioning program or group fitness program, then that wouldn't be the first place I would look to, because the historical model of like, this is how you run a CrossFit gym isn't necessarily connected to the current times. I think that there's plenty of other ways to do it. Now, should you be doing squats and swings and, you know, calisthenics and, you know, have a clock on the wall that you might time something and have assault bikes and rowers and, you know, also have a full set of dumbbells and maybe a cable machine? Like, yes, you should have all these things. And, you know, I think that what that gym space is going to continue to evolve to look like is going to be different. And I don't want to go the route of like, let me strip it down to just the functional elements like CrossFit did. I'm more like, I want to have the bodybuilding section and the functional section, and I want to see people kind of going and flowing between them. And, you know, on that note, like about 4 or 5 years ago, I was down in San Diego for regionals. I wasn't competing this year. This is the year I took off between 2014, 2016. I went down to just watch and just sort of see what was happening with my you know, competitors. I was going to come back the next year and compete again. And my buddy Brian Miller was like, hey, man, I'm living up in Encinitas. You know, come and train with me at this gym and we'll go and watch the competition together. I'm like, okay, what's the name of it? It's like, it's called Physical Culture. I'm like, oh, it's not even a CrossFit gym, but okay, whatever. So I go to this place called Physical Culture and it was like, show up. And it was like the coolest place I'd ever seen. The whole perimeter of the facility was machines, like machines that I would love to use. The center was like a functional fitness kind of like, you know, rig slash squat stand slash barbells, rubber mats. In the backyard, they had a sand pit with big rope climbing station, an outdoor rig. So it was like bodybuilding meets functional training all in the same space. And it was like so cool. I was like, this is the future. This is what gyms should look like. And here I am like, you know, 5 years later, and we're doing like a studio redesign at Revival Strength, functional bodybuilding headquarters, to be like, yeah, we're going to actually have that kind of space here. This is what we're trying to create. This is what it has to look like going forward, because we, you know, the model of like, we're just going to strip it down. We're going to make this like functional fitness training space, and we're going to pack a bunch of people in here. It's like, it overlooks so much of the other potential, you know, overlap that could be happening between old methods and new methods. So that's just like an added thought to, if there's a gym owner that's out there thinking about like, how do I strip down my gym to get to the most functional elements to run the best 15 to 20 person class? It's like, hey, think a little bit outside of the box and think about what tools and what things you might want to have available at your facility that could really add a ton of value, you know, to the people that are on the fringes that don't fit that perfect, like, you know, group model in the middle.
When did you publish the first for purchase functional bodybuilding program? When did that go live? And that your first like e-com, you know, ready to go, let's ship this out to the public.
It's almost been exactly 4 years. So it was like late March of 2016.
Okay. Since then, how many people have purchased and enrolled
in the program? 2017.
Okay.
Yeah. Since then, it's probably been, let's see, Awaken Training Series was, the lifespan of Awaken Training Series probably had about 7,000 to 8,000 people do that. And then other programs that we've launched since then, probably add another 3,000 to 4,000 programs that we've sold. So I don't know, we're probably in the 10,000 programs or participant range right now.
And with that, so, you know, the one thing when I'm working with someone who they believe they want to create their own unique belief in fitness, and you got to have R&D. Right? There's got to be development time. And you obviously use yourself as a guinea pig for this for a while. You had a great background of knowledge. You had the breadth and depth of experience to try these different things and the discipline to really stick to maybe your own experiment. But now that you've cycled that many people through, how far off was your first iteration of it versus where it kind of is today? Was there like, man, the 1.0 of what I was doing was, I thought it was the best, but honestly, where we're at today with it, I've included these different things. What's been that degree of separation?
It's funny, cause I'm like, you know, 4 years later, I'm actually going and revisiting 1.0 to sort of get reconnected with like, okay, where did this thing really start? What made this unique and what's special about it in this? Because there's like certain, forces that are pulling many of us in the fitness world that are kind of like these little like undercurrents that you can't even tell are there, but we're all getting swept up by them.
Sure.
It's like, what's sexy? What gets people kind of interested? Like currently, yeah. You know, what's a hot topic? What's a new move? What's like, and it's almost, and also like, what is Instagram driving? What are people like clicking on liking, right? On a day-to-day basis, you might think as a coach, you're like, I'm not influenced by that. I'm impervious to these like, you know, subtle, you know, direction pushing, you know, fads that are happening out there. But over the course of a year, 2 years, you're falling into it. You're getting pulled. Like it's hard to stay true to something when there's this sort of like subtle pull that's tug that's happening on you every single day, all the time. And so I'm looking at like, okay, where are we at today? What made functional bodybuilding truly different? And, you know, the core foundations are certainly there. I would say that, you know, if I were going to prescribe ascribe a percentage to it, it's like maybe we're 80% of what we started out as, and we've kind of evolved 20%. Some of those evolutions were good. Some of them have kind of, you know, maybe not added value. They just kind of changed the face and the feel of it so that we could market and kind of reach a different audience, or reach a bigger audience. Right. And that's oftentimes what ends up changing some of the deliverables that you have in your fitness philosophy is like, hey, when I talk about this, I get twice as many people to pay attention. Okay, I'm going to start adding that more, you know, more of that in. You might not strongly believe in that because the market is just out there. Like they think they want this, and you start to give them a little bit of that. And then that starts to kind of change some of your, you know, program delivery or whatever. So that's been, yeah, I think it's important for me to like keep doing the research, you know, on what gets this in front of more people. What draws in an audience? What is going to get 100,000 more eyeballs onto functional bodybuilding? And if that means I have to like take a slight departure in my messaging, right? Because everything at the beginning with functional bodybuilding was built, not burnt. You know, we're going to build you up. We're not going to burn you out. Why? Because I was a burnt out CrossFitter that needed to get built back up. Right. And so that was the message. Now it's like, look good, move well, like be sexy, but also have good movement. That was always part of the tagline, but we're leaning into that more, the aesthetic side of training, the aesthetic side of functional bodybuilding, and less the performance side, because I'm so far removed from CrossFit as a sport. So it's like the messaging is changing a little bit. It's helping us reach this audience. And then now it's like, okay, bringing them in and wanting to make sure that they're getting clear, a clear description of what it means to move well, right? Honor good positions, you know, build up strong strength foundations, lead a training life of consistency and sustainability. And with when you do all those things, you get to look sexy for a long time. Right. And so, yeah.
With, one thing I want to do to wrap this up, I really want for the people listening to this that are, they're probably CrossFit owners or some kind of barbell based strength and conditioning model. And they see the flaws in the way and they know it could be done different. Like they are questioning why they, just like you said, why are people snatching? Why is there an emphasis on kipping versus, you know, a kipping pull-up versus a strict and isometrically holding at the top, all this great stuff. They have an audience that they've already procured that is interested in that, but only because the owner, the leader, shoveled it down their mouth first. And I tell these guys all the time, you taught them this is the way. You can unteach them. Yeah. It is a little bit of a bloody mess. You will lose some people. You are going to have to, you know, re-educating a consumer is a very difficult thing to do. What advice would you give to someone who is currently exploring, kind of going down the rabbit hole of creating their own unique belief in fitness? Where should they start?
Start with yourself. I mean, it's like that's my story. That's what I've shared here. It's like, I just started with myself. I didn't look outside of myself to find like, this doesn't feel right, you know, or, you know, what's going to be better for my clients. It was like, this isn't working for me. I don't feel connected to this. You know, we have individual coaching clients still within our company, and a handful of them are gym owners. They come and work with us. They get individual coaching. They have this amazing experience. And then I end up having a conversation with them that goes something like this. Hey, Marcus, the classes that I'm teaching, the workouts that I'm giving my clients, they don't feel right anymore. They don't feel honest. I don't believe in it as much. I'm doing this thing over here with you. I'm doing functional bodybuilding every day. I have a coach. It's feeling great. I'm making tons of progress. That's what I believe in. How do I make that what my clients get? And I'm like, well, that there you go. Like, you've changed your core, you know, beliefs in fitness through experience, through yourself. And now it doesn't feel right to stand up in front of the class and say, all right, here we go, guys. We're doing a 30-minute AMRAP, 3, 2, 1, go. And, you know, just grind it out. So that's where we start. And how you start to change your language with your clients, you know, that's the bloody mess that, you know, has to happen. But if you believe in what you're teaching them, it's going to get them on board with you just the same way that you got them on board with this crazy idea of going super fast and kipping and flailing and throwing weights around and dropping barbells from it. Nobody came to the gym thinking that was a good idea. You convinced them that that was a good idea. And if you can convince somebody that going at, you know, top speed with weight and feeling like they're going to die in a workout is good, which you were successful in doing, then I'm pretty sure you're going to be able to get them on board with something that's perhaps safer, perhaps more effective, perhaps much more reasonable when you think about the longevity of that client. Like, you can do it for sure, but you have to believe in it. You know, I can't go and sell F45. I just can't do it. Is F45 like helping people? Sure, but I don't even know anything about it. I can't be a strong believer in it. I can't go up and stand in front of a group and be like, this is the way to do fitness, right? I can sell functional bodybuilding because I do it and I believe in it. I saw E.C. Sinkowski. She's like the founder of the 800 gram challenge. And she's, you know, former CrossFit Flowmaster, I think, or whatever, you know, she's been in the community a long time. I just saw her post something that said, like, the reason I love the 800 gram challenge so much, and the reason I can promote it so much, is because since I started it or founded it 3 years ago or whatever, I've done it every single day since. She is just like living and breathing this method that she is seeing, not, you know, tremendous results for herself, but for others. And it's with rooted in that, like, I'm doing this myself. I believe in it so much that I can stand in front of you and teach it. And that's really where gym owners or coaches need to start. It's like, get clear on what you believe in, what works for you. And if you're doing something that you don't believe in, that's equally as powerful. Get clear on what you don't believe in and why. If CrossFit's no longer working for you, which I'm not the first, you know, fitness or CrossFit athlete, coach, whatever, that had that realization or had that moment of like, I got to do it differently. Getting clear on why it wasn't working for me so that I could articulate it to people and I could tell them, I could share it in a way that didn't make them feel bad for still liking it, right? Like, I don't want somebody who's like having success in winning with CrossFit and CrossFit group classes to think that they're doing anything wrong. They're not. If this is working for you, great. Don't change a thing. All right. But if and when it stops working for you and you maybe run into some of the same obstacles I'm running into or I've run into, then I'm going to have a conversation with you because I believe that there might be a better way.
Marcus Philly, everybody. Marcus, if people want to get in contact with you, learn more about functional bodybuilding, Revival Strength, or anything else that you're creating out there, how can they do that?
You can come to my Instagram page, Marcus Philly, or go to my website, revival-strength.com/free, and get on my newsletter, get a bunch of free content from me every single week, training programs, nutrition programs, things like that. So those would be the two places to go.
Marcus, I appreciate you taking the time this morning, brother. It was great jamming with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, sir.